morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And good morning, Mr. Geography. Where are we?
Well, we're in a rather unusual place. We're producing a program on the road, always an adventure, and we're in Casco Bay, which is, for those people who don't know, is off the coast of Maine from Portland, Maine. And we've been in Maine this week. We're actually returning home today, but we're producing a program before we go, so that's available for you when you want to listen. And we've had some very interesting adventures during the time that we've been here.
Right. Now, would you say we're sort of south of Maine or in south?
We're in what Maine is called down east.
Down east.
Okay. But I think it's still about 60 or 70 miles from the Maine-New Hampshire border.
So we're not far enough south, really.
No, well, it's still considered down east, and I guess there must be an up west, and there's a mountain area of Maine.
It's a little chilly on this island.
It is. It's supposed to be. The islands were the refuge for people who were seeking escape from the oppressive heat of the cities of the northeastern United States. And we're going to come back to a visit with the Chabig Island in.
Okay, well, let's start
at the end of this program. But
let's start off with a star here. I mean, he's such an award-winning. I mean, I guess he's the celebrity chef, Lee Skowinski.
And Lee Skowinski, not satisfied with having one restaurant, has to have two, and here he is to tell you all about it.
Last night we had a marathon meal. What do you call the progressive meal? We started at the Vignola for cocktails and antipasti, and then moved on to Cinque Terre. Both of these are restaurants co-owned by Chef Lee Skowinski. And I was dying to meet him because both restaurants have so much personality. I was sure he did have. And he does. You're a real winner, Lee.
Thank you.
We wanted to get some background. Explain how these are Italian restaurants.
Well, we have two different concepts that we work with. At Cinque Terre, it's a little more of a traditional restaurant where you'll have multiple courses of smaller portions and have that real unique Italian experience. At Vignola, it's a little more of a wine bar with a little bit more broader menu where it's more sharing plates and things of that nature. So we wanted two different concepts, one to be a little more fine dining and one to be a little more casual. And at Vignola, we have a little more expressive wine list where we have selections from France and Spain and Austria also, along with Italy.
And you also have this craft bartender. I mean, I think he calls himself a bartender rather than a bar chef or a mixologist, Scott.
He's very modest with his name tag.
We had lots of fun. Yeah.
No, but he's a very, very, very good bartender.
Now, we were talking, is your interest in, you've been doing this, it's not even part of a current trend, you've been doing this farm-to-table relationship. Your idea, I read, was the chef really wasn't that important. It was the ingredients. Is that correct?
Well, it's true. I mean, you know, the quality of the ingredients that we get is the biggest piece of the puzzle. And it's, you know, treating the product with respect and not trying to overwork it or manipulate it too much and let its true self shine.
We had so much good food. It was just amazing.
Yeah, we've had a couple of other chefs tell us that the secret is getting good ingredients and then not messing them up.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, especially when it comes to, you know, when we're dealing with whole animals and stuff like that, you can really tell the quality of a product when you're breaking it down from the basics on. And you can see where quality levels come through in so many levels. So it's nice to be able to kind of take things from a primal state and take them down and process them minimally to where they end up on the plate.
Now, but you've been at that for a long time, and part of this is because you so closely participated in Italian cooking in Italy, right?
Well, I've traveled through Italy for the last 25 years. And mainly in the last 8 or 9 years, I've really spent a lot of time there and kind of really looking at the simplicity of the cuisine. And the focus of the product is the vegetable, the protein, and letting that shine, treating with the minimal of, you know, respect.
Now, how did you end up? What's your route here?
I started off as a dishwasher when I was a young guy.
Really?
Working seasonally in New Hampshire and I worked for a Frenchman who had worked on Wall Street for 20 years, and he retired in the Lakes region, and he took a number of us under his wing and kind of showed us the way, and, you know, we learned a lot of basic, good fundamentals from him on clean flavors and simplicity and proper mixing of ingredients and taking care of the product. And that really motivated me to go to culinary school down the line.
Where did you go to culinary school?
I went to culinary school at Newbury College in Boston, Mass.
In Boston. But you are a New Englander anyhow.
True.
Your credentials, because part of this attraction is that you have this Italian attitude, but you are also a small-town New England product.
No, it's true. You know, we source all the vegetable seed that we can from Italian companies, and we grow that stuff up at our farm in Green, Maine. So there's a connection there with trying to emulate what our friends do in Italy with their growing practices and what they're growing and the quality of the vegetables and the style of the vegetable.
What did I read about Puntarelli? You grow real Puntarelli?
We grow real Puntarelli. We grow real radicchio. We grow a lot of original winter Italian squashes that are popular up north. It's from meeting people and gathering seed and sourcing seed from different places in England and in the States that are really focused on Italian vegetables.
Now, you, in addition to what you produce yourself, your menu acknowledges all of your partner producers, the farms that you buy from. Are there a lot of those in Maine?
Maine, you have to remember, was a very deeply agricultural state for the last 100 years.
The climate's not so swell.
No, the climate's a little difficult at points. But the thing to remember is the people lived off the land and they lived off the ocean here originally. And those were the two foundations for income, along with tourism. Great potato-growing state. We're a great blueberry-growing state. You know, we have these niche markets that other states don't have. And we have the ocean where lobstering and cod fisheries were huge. And oysters now, I think the specialty oyster market in Maine, as you guys tried last night,
tell us what that
is. One of the best.
Now, I mean, there is a local oyster that we've had the most of, and then we had this oyster that you had on your menus last night. Now, so tell us what they are.
Well, we have a special relationship with a small oyster farm that are in East Bath on the New Meadows River, and it's a family that's been on this property since King James was deeding land to Maine from England. And their family been in this area for over 200 years. And these gentlemen are the youngest of the family. They're two cousins that have access to growing oysters right on the family's property at the very end of the New Meadows River. The thing that's unique about what they do is that they have
that's salt water?
It's salt water, but it's a very special micro-aquaculture. And this is kind of what makes Maine oysters very interesting.
I love them. Absolutely
the accessibility
love them.
To salt water, the depth of the brininess, how the oysters are cared for, the quality of the seed. And this is what Maine specializes in. Oysters like to grow in waters that are between 38, 40 degrees and 55 degrees is where they excel in growth. And the waters in Maine are typically at that temperature for probably, I would guess, 8 to 9 months of the year.
Wow.
Whereas there's only a chunk of time in the summer when the water raises and the growth slows down. So we have these very special little microclimates going up and down the coast of Maine. And these guys have a very particularly interesting area where the brininess of the oyster is just perfectly balanced with the actual meat.
And if you eat the oyster properly, consuming the liquor as well, you can taste that brininess right there in the oyster liquor.
We try not to, again, we're trying to accent the product, but we do a mini-net with a Trebbiano vinegar instead of a stronger vinegar where there's almost a touch of sweetness to it. So the brininess, the saltiness, and the quality of the vinegar that we use in the mini-net almost makes this perfect balance with this oyster. And as you go up and down the coast, the oysters are stronger and weaker and brininess and different flavors.
Now, what is this one I just adored?
The winter point is
we didn't put any dressing on at all. We just have it with nature as dressing.
Yes. And we go out fishing with John every now and again, and we crack some oysters and bring some lemon and some horseradish, and we eat them right there on dockside. And it's
now, how do people get it if they're not eating in restaurants in Maine? Does Brown Trading do it?
Brown Trading does ship his oysters into New York, I believe.
Yeah.
It's, you know, these are really, you know, these guys produce a couple million pieces of product a year, which seems like a lot,
but it's really
not that much. And, you know, when come around that they're making, you know, 1,000 pieces a week, you know. But the interesting thing about these two guys is that quality of the product. It's a two-guy operation. It's completely family-run on family land, and they probably have the best office in all of Maine, because I'll tell you, it's one of the most pristine, quiet, and most beautiful settings that you can imagine. And it shows in the product. They care about what they do, and its quality is the most important part of the process.
Now, Lee, can you talk a little bit about the menu that we had last night? You said before we came on the air that you were glad we had a chance to sample everything. We were, in a way, we were a little sorry that we got to sample everything. Because there was such a lot of it.
But I mean, it really was
excellent. So tell our listeners what you had them prepare for us
last night. You know, I wanted you guys to be able to try, you know, some of the real special local items that we do.
And when you're telling us, you're going to differentiate these restaurants, right?
Yes.
Did you? Okay.
So I think the first thing that was really important was for you guys to try the lamb that we have, which is grown from a friend farmer of ours who's a doctor up in South Paris, right at the bottom of Streaked Mountain.
I mean, it was really good, and we are spoiled because we have at home two premier lamb growers, Elysian Fields and Jamison Farm. But this was great lamb.
And we all grew up with the idea that, you know, lamb is a little stronger and assertive meat with maybe a touch of gaminess to it. But these meats are so tender, mild. We've actually had people come to us and say, God, they think that they're eating filet mignon sometimes when they're trying our lamb, because it's got this beautiful subtletiness. Yeah, that was one of the important things that was, you know, that we wanted you to try. The other thing was this rabbit dish.
We've
developed and kind of has been an evolving dish where we take loins and wrap them and stuff them with mushrooms and fennel. And it's a dish that we've worked on for years and has really kind of come to its own now. But these are two great products that we have right in our backyard. And being able to take these things and just...
I'm trying to remember.
You also reach out across the world if necessary, though.
Well,
So we had a little fish from Italy.
Oh, that was right.
The branzino, which very, very popular item on the menu. You guys had it filleted and seared on the half, and then with a little puntarella salad, and just a little bit of garlic, olive oil, and parsley, and a little bit of lemon, and just a simple preparation of a really great-tasting fish.
So now that's the characteristic of Cinque Terre that you say is your flag. How about Vignola? I mean, that's your newer restaurant, right?
Vignola is a little more casual concept where we do kind of sharing antipastis and pizzas.
And we had wonderful, the seafood antipasti was to die for.
You know, and that's just
little
us.
Lobsters. I mean, a little lobster on your...
And, you know, these are the beautiful things from Maine. You know, everything there that we tried, you know, the little
oysters,
beautiful
the
treasures from the ocean that are right in our backyard.
But what about that involtini?
I forgot about that.
It's another dish that, you know, we've been playing with for years. And it's just a fun little dish. You know, we take eggplant, slice them super thin, roll them up with different meats and cheeses, and then lightly fry them, and we serve them with a tomato and olive oil sauce that's blended it all together with basil, and it's just a couple simple ingredients,
but it really shines. You know how much we've eaten.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you, I've never had anything quite like that in Voltini. Now, I didn't know where it came from. It came out of the blue. It was really unexpected.
Well, traditionally,
and really
it's a Sicilian
delicious
dish.
Which is my background, and
which
I
is
still
where they would, like, you
it
know, often you would see swordfish in Voltini down in Sicily.
Yeah, right.
Where they would stuff it with maybe anchovies and garlic and breadcrumbs and cook it slowly in a tomato sauce. We've done a veal and Voltini, which is very similar to like a beef bracciolo, where you would pound it and roll it and stuff it and cook it in that kind of format. We just think that the eggplant's kind of a fun one to play with, and it expresses the dish of how it's supposed to be, a rolled kind of stuffed dish. But we can use a vegetable and kind of play with some things, and it's fun, and people really, really enjoy it.
Now, I understand that you are really deeply involved with your wine program. And I guess you're an expert on Italian wines too, right?
Well, I wouldn't say expert, but I certainly enjoy my share of Italian wines.
Well, Cinque Terre makes a statement because all the wines are Italian.
Well, Cinque Terre,
every single one.
We really try to. I've always, at Cinque Terre, I've always tried to keep the focus on Italy. And that's where developing the garden with Italian varietals and a lot of the techniques that we use over there are from recipes and dishes that we've seen over the years and how we've translated them. So the focus has always been to keep it core and directive and have some parameters to work with it. And I love the ability and the opportunity to go and explore Italy. And
to learn about the wines of Italy.
And it's one of my greatest passions. Is I have the opportunity and accessibility to meet people and to learn these things. And then to take these items and share them with my customers and bring them back and educate them a little bit about the things that we've learned along the way.
Now, I read also that you are a hands-on chef, that you actually generally work the line. Now, how can you do that, and do you do that?
Oh, yeah, I do. I work the line 4 nights a week, sometimes 5, depending on the week that we're in. And
that's amazing. I mean, how many years have you been chefing?
I've been cooking since I was 18, okay. Officially, and I was, you know.
How did you, what happened at 18 that you started cooking?
Well, I moved to California right out of high school and wanted to learn a little bit about, you know, working with fresh food, and I had friends living in Santa Barbara, so
nice place.
I worked out, and I was actually working with some of the gentlemen who worked for Michel Richard right before he opened Citronelle in 87.
Yeah,
so
he's a character, yeah.
I really get to get my feet wet and kind of, you know, learn a couple of life's lessons very quickly as a young man as to what was ahead of me in this career. And I spent a year in California, and then at that point I decided I better go to school. And this was a different time and place, you know. The 80s were a different time with being a young man and being a common chef. It wasn't an interesting career as it may be now. And back then it was a different climate. You know, you kind of got out of school, you tried to go work for the best guy you could, or you went to work for a hotel, you know, when you learned your craft that way. So it was, you know, it was a fun time. I actually learned, I ended up doing a little bit of both. I ended up working in hotels and doing some stuff on my own, and then going back and working for chefs and learning a little bit more, and then kind of going back out on my own, and then going back and working, and you get to where you want to be, hopefully down the line.
Yeah, so, and you got into the kitchen at Cinque Terre, you said, about a year after it opened,
yes. Right,
about 8 years ago. And as luck would have it, your partner was interested in the same kinds of things as you are, I guess, because he just happens to be a farmer.
Well, Dan was a gentleman farmer for a number of years. He's got a 40-acre farm up in Green, Maine. So he was always growing things and doing stuff on the farm. And we decided to organize it a little bit more and make these things a little more practical. And we learned how to use the farm to make a little money for the restaurant here and there by growing certain items that were, in the sense, good cash crops, because they were could bring things in and sell them right away and get a return on it. So we, and, you know, and you learn a little something every year. You're not everything grows great every year. You know, you have your ups and your downs, yeah. And the weather and the climate of the garden, and sometimes you need to make some changes.
So how did you get back here to New England?
Well, I really came back from college, and I went to college in Boston, and then I ended up working down on Block Island for a while and ended up being back in Boston in the off-season, and eventually ended up in Maine. You know, my wife's company offered her a job here, and I had just done some openings for some restaurants, and it was the right time. You know, and they said, you know, would you guys want to come to Maine and open a market? And she was interested, and I kind of was like, great, it was another stage of life.
You can find out more either by Googling Cinque Terre or by Googling Vignola.
You better spell Cinque Terre.
But there's, which is the website that's the best access that people need?
Well, you can, they're both sites are connected. So if you're on the Vignola site, you can just click right over to Cinque Terre. Or if you're on the Cinque Terre site, it's easily just to go to Vignola too.
And why don't you spell those guys out for people who are not fluent in Italian like we are?
Cinque Terre is CINQUETERRE,
Maine.com.
And Vignola is VIGNOLA, Maine.com.
Well, what a pleasure it was to catch up with you this evening, Lee. And we did have a wonderful time at both of your restaurants yesterday. And listeners, if you come to Portland, Maine, You're just going to have to go to both of them, but I would advise you to do it on a separate night.
Yeah, I think that that was a bit overkill, but I could come back and eat here tonight and then go over and eat at the Cinque Terre tomorrow night. I'd love all the food. Thank you so much for talking to us, too.
Well, it was my pleasure. It was our pleasure to serve you guys. Thanks again.
Ciao.
Ciao.
And now it's time for a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Here we are again. Do you think it's safe to say that I've more or less OD'd on lobster in our trip to Maine?
You did. You did. Well,
I had lobster gazpacho.
I'm not sure whether you did.
Lobster salad. I had lobster boiled in a crab shack. I had lobster butter poached. And lordy, 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 I had a lobster corn dog, courtesy of somebody we'll be hearing from later on, Chef Justin Rao.
Right, but back into
let's talk to Jeff.
Portland again, a restaurant that's a little bit out of the ordinary for Portland. There's quite a lot of Italian in Portland, and La Vignola and Vignola and Cinque Terre not being by any means the only ones, but a restaurant called Walter's changed hands. Relatively recently, and moved recently. It's an unusual story, which you'll hear in the interview. And the style of cuisine is really quite different, because it's exotic flavors.
Well, and he spent time in Miami.
Rather than traditional flavors that are really catching on in Portland, because this place was packed the night we were there, and they've been very, very busy. And wonderful news for Portlanders who like to sit outside. They have got, I think, probably the first outdoor seating in a restaurant in Portland as well. So here's Jeff Boerhouse from Walter's.
We're talking to chef owner Jeff Boerhouse of Walter's. And in Portland, of course, that's where we are. And we're going to have to straighten out where we are, because Walter's, who is that's been around for quite a long time, 20 years, I think Jeff said, was recently relocated and re-emphasized in certain areas. Welcome to On the Menu, Jeff.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
How did you end up in this part? You're a native New Englander.
I'm a native New Englander, yes. I grew up here in Auburn, as well as my wife. Most of my training, however, was in South Florida. That's when I went through a midlife crisis and decided I wanted to cook and be a chef.
What did you leave behind?
It was a family business of industrial insulation, asbestos removal. So,
hard one.
living my father's dream, not mine. So,
I might say that Cheryl, your wife and partner in this venture, declined. She was very busy doing back of the house.
Right. She takes care of the back of the house. Well, actually, she oversees the wait staff as well, so she's quite busy tonight.
She does front house, too.
Yes.
Okay. Well, anyhow, so somehow or other, you went off, abandoned the family business, took up chefing, worked in Florida, and decided to, and California, you said, right?
No, it was just Florida, South Florida.
Oh, I thought you said California, too. Okay, so South Florida, and which explains the Caribbean notes in your menu, and came back here. Why did you come back here?
Well, I've got three boys, and when they entered middle school, we said, you know what, let's go back to Maine, to the simpler life, as they say. And we wanted to get them into good schools up this way. And it was also an opportunity to kind of bring back what I had learned in Florida and maybe apply it to some restaurants up this way. So it was, you know, a twofold reasons.
Okay, now, how long ago was that when you did that?
We came back here in 1999.
Okay. And you bought into this restaurant?
I worked for I worked for Walter's in two or three different restaurants up here in the Portland area. And over a period of 5 years, I had the opportunity with the previous owner of Walter's to buy it from him. He owned two different restaurants, and
he
had two restaurants, and he wanted to scale back. And I was looking for a restaurant, so between the two things, it worked out for us.
Okay, so you bought a single restaurant.
We bought a single restaurant, yeah.
Walter's. And it was the one that had a lot of tradition and really faithful clientele. And you decided that you were going to move on and change things. Tell us about that.
Well, I didn't want to change it too much because I do realize that when we bought the restaurant that it did have a good customer base and didn't want to scare people by just, you know, taking it over and doing all kinds of different dishes. So we kept some of the dishes that people were accustomed to on the menu and then just added some of my own little influences here and there and kind of did a slow move to, making it our own.
But there are more differences between the old Walter's and that you said you have a much enhanced bar program.
Yep. When we did move Walter's over, which used to be on 15 Exchange Street over here to 2 Portland Square, my wife and I wanted to put our own little niche on it by giving it a big city feel, that with the big windows, the expanded bar of 16 seats, the fireplace you see when you come in, just that warm, comfy feeling. And at the same time, we wanted to expand the menu, and we did that with the bar menu, which is approximately 20 plates on the smaller side for people to buy and share together and, do a group of them.
And you recently also put in an outdoor dining area.
Yeah, we got the approval a couple of weeks back to do outside dining. It's a beautiful, we call it the courtyard out back, and it's got the feel of being in like a city park with a lot of beautiful trees, and it's unique. Yeah, people are really enjoying it.
Now, how did, talk about, first of all, if people were coming here to eat, what sort of food would they expect to get?
At Walter's, I like to call it New World, or we do a lot of globe trotting, Mediterranean, Caribbean, Asian influences. I just love those cuisines, so you'll see that all over the menu.
And do you want to talk a little bit about your personal touches on this menu?
Personal favorites or touches?
Well, you can do either. They're both interesting.
Yeah, I've got one dish called the Forbidden Shrimp. And what is that? It's a pancia jumbo shrimp, and it's been called that it has a lot of umami flavors. I take Chinese black rice, forbidden rice, and we saute that with crushed edamame, shimaji mushrooms, which is a local mushroom up this way, and Chinese sweet sausage, and kind of do a stir fry with that. And then we do a little drizzle of what we call bulgogi Korean barbecue. So all those things going together on one plate is
fabulous.
That's like
those trucks in Los Angeles, the gogi trucks.
Oh,
yeah,
there we
that's
go.
Good. Yeah,
nice.
Tell us what we're going to be eating. Do you have specific dishes you have in mind?
Well, the one I just said I'd like one of you to have, and the other one would be I like our pan-seared Long Island duck breast, which comes with arancinis. Except we do a little bit of an Asian twist with that, whereas we use sticky rice and we stuff it with grilled scallions and pickled ginger, and then deep fry it. And then two different Asian sauces are drizzled on it, one being a Thai red curry and the other being a soy ginger base. So a lot of flavor going on there, too.
And aren't you just blown away by all the fresh ingredients you can get here in Portland?
Oh, that and being on the ocean right here, it's just the amount of different seafoods that we get is unbelievable. So.
I mean, what's your favorite thing to work with seafood-wise?
Oh, it's probably
when the scallop. I'm assuming it's not lobster.
Right. Yeah, we do. Yeah, we hear a lot of lobster. But when the scallops are coming out of the bay, the pan-seared jumbo scallops, unbelievable. They're still moving when we get them. So that's one of my favorite things.
What is it again? Are we getting those?
I did not mention that one, but. Yes, yeah.
What's down the line here? Are people accepting the changes?
We were a little worried, you know, when you make a move like this, that how people are going to accept you when you move over. And when we opened our doors, we were flooded with people. And, we've gotten new customers and old customers, you know, that have come back to us. So we can't be more happier.
Well, it's a very comfortable environment, and it does have that big city feel to it.
Yes,
which I think is important to sort of differentiate yourself from all these Portland restaurants.
Yeah, exactly. In Portland, you see a lot of brick and wood, which is, you know, a beautiful feel, but, we want to do something just a little bit different, just to, stand out. So I think we've done it.
Do you have, like, do you do the sommelier work, or do you have a sommelier?
We have a sommelier. He's not here tonight.
And what about a pastry chef?
We do have a pastry chef that works.
So desserts are also big?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. How about, is there a current website you could give our listeners?
We do. It's www.waltersportland.com, and we also have a Facebook page as well to keep up on current menu items or specials or different events. So,
that's good. Yeah. Okay. Do you Twitter as well?
We don't Twitter.
Anyhow, listeners, we will do a wrap-up of what we ate after we eat. And, Jeff, I thank you so much for the time to talk to us.
Well, awesome. Thank you for having me.
You're going right into service, so I'm going to let you go.
All right. Thank you.
You know, Portland's progressed so much, and part of that can be measured by the fact that we just couldn't cover all of them in the 5 days that we were here. Some really important restaurants we just couldn't get to, but I think we ought to mention them.
Well, two great local favorites are 555
and
4th Street, which is also the name of a street.
F-O-R-E.
And then James Beard, Best Chef Northeast, Rob Evans, has a fine dining restaurant called Hugo's, and a casual restaurant called Duck Fat.
That was intriguing. We're thinking about those fries.
We're thinking about Duck Fat fries for lunch today before we go home.
who
can tell if that's what we do? You're going to have to look at your dining options in Portland, Maine, very carefully to make sure that you take the best advantage of it that you can. The challenge for us was that many of the restaurants are only open for dinner. We discovered something interesting, and we like Vignola so much we should mention this on air, because I forgot to mention it at the time we put the interview on. We discovered that they are open for lunch on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, which is, I don't think it actually says that on the website. So that's another useful piece of information if you're trying to pack in as much dining as you can.
And with that, I think it's about time we take a break.
I think it is.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
We're back, and we've sort of changed locations. We took a very leisurely ferry ride, which had beautiful, beautiful scenery across this bay. Bay?
Yes.
Yes.
Cassio Bay. Yeah. You actually have two ways to get here. One is the long way and the slow way, which is the mail boat, which takes about 2 hours from Portland, Maine, but is very scenic in doing it. If you want a shorter trip, you can make it fast on the water taxi for $65 to $75 for the ride. Or you can take a shorter ferry from Yarmouth, assuming that you have a car that will get you to Yarmouth. There's a 15-minute ferry ride from this small town north of Portland, Maine, that you can do to get here more quickly. So you've got a variety of options, but it's a really fascinating story. First of all, we're going to talk to co-owner Casey Prentice. And incidentally, he's the voice that you'll hear first, because somehow or other, we never recorded who he was when we started the interview. We just started out talking about his middle initial W.
Oh, is that true?
But he's Casey W. Prentice, co-owner and general manager of the Shubig Island Inn. And then right after that, talking to Chef Justin Rowe, who's been a magnificent success already in this first season cooking here. So here's Casey and Justin.
You know, I shouldn't do this. Casey W. Prentice. But what is the W for, considering our recent associations with W?
The W is for William. I actually got my name. I was supposed to be Kevin Charles, and they were going to call me Casey for short, K period C period. And then, lo and behold, my dad decided that he'd rather not have me have a nickname that meant something. So I have another grandfather named William, and so I got Casey for long, C-A-S-E-Y, William for the other grandfather, and Prentice. So there we are.
Well, I think this is going to be an interesting discussion, because you are part owner, general manager of the Shubig Island Inn, which is probably one of the prettiest properties I've seen in a long time.
Thank you very much.
And you are really a co-owner in a sense because of your whole family is involved in this. First of all, what kind of background did you have that prepared you to take over this resort property on this island off the coast of Maine?
Life's funny. I don't have any official hotel background. I worked in many restaurants throughout my career at Middlebury College as a student just in the summertime. I worked in Newport, Rhode Island for a company that actually owns and operates many restaurants and a few hotel properties, one of which is a Relais and Chateau property.
Which is that?
It is the Newport Harbor Corporation. And unbeknownst to me, I learned a great deal. I opened a restaurant with them. Just as a lowly back server, food runner, and bar back. But I took a lot from that experience. I took it with me. I worked as a bartender. I've even done a very quick stint as a line cook. I've been a bar back, a server, all sorts of different restaurants.
And you're young.
I am young. I'm 24.
I didn't realize you were that young.
Oh, yeah, very young. I just graduated Middlebury in 2009. So,
oh, wow.
One summer I did do an internship for Tishman Hotels in New York City. So I was an intern, did a lot of number punching. But once again, you kind of absorb stuff.
Now, are you the firstborn of your siblings?
I am not. I'm the middle child.
You're a middle child.
Blessed
okay.
with patience, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Very important in this industry.
Now, we also mustn't forget that you were a woofer.
I was a woofer.
Now, just explain that, because that's part of the puzzle as well.
It is. It's a big part of it, actually. I did time at Spinocchia. Also, I took time off from college and went to Spinocchia. It's a part of the World Wide Organic Farm Association in Italy, just south of Siena. And I worked on there for a few months in their vineyards and olive groves and studied the art of making wine, Vinsanto, grappa, limoncello, all of that delicious stuff, olive oil, and had a great time with it. But it really gave me a founding for the style of cuisine that I like. I like organic. I like local. I like sustainable.
So no wonder you ended up with Justin.
Exactly. Justin was a natural. It's a really natural. And they seem to be buzz items, or buzzwords. But for Justin and for myself, it really isn't. It's more based around flavors. You know when you're eating something that's fresh. And as kind of a businessman, I really like supporting small local things. I'm an entrepreneur myself. I like to support other entrepreneurs. It's kind of a mentality, a mindset. So Justin and I see eye to eye on a lot of things.
You managed to, I don't want to use the wrong word here, engage your whole family in this project.
I did.
Tell us about that. Your mother actually told us about that, but she now has to be answering the telephone.
Exactly.
She can't be part of the
Exactly,
industry.
Yeah.
And we understand she doesn't
Somebody
get
needs
paid.
To work. Exactly. Yeah, I'm blessed to have my mother as a part of this team.
She's delightful.
She is. She's great. It's kind of funny. I was doing real estate development prior to this, and I was working on a deal that fell through last minute. I got a call within 12 hours about this property, the Shubig Island Inn, heard it was for sale, came up under cloak of bartender, and did worked here for 5 weeks as a bartender, really doing due diligence. They handed me the keys, and I
You're
got
kidding.
To...
You're kidding. You faked your way into
I
this
I did.
Thing.
I faked my way in. Sometimes you got to be sly. So I needed to see. I did a lot of research, and I read a lot about the Shubig Island Inn and its ups and downs and ins and outs. So I needed to come and see hands-on for myself to see if it would be viable. It reminded me a lot of a property actually in New Hampshire that my family has gone to ever since I was one, called Twin Lake Village. And it's got the same old charm feel of it, this really early 1900s inn.
And you're a preservationist at heart.
I am a preservationist at heart. My real estate development was very heavily focused around green principles, green building principles.
You're certified, LEED certified.
I am LEED certified, and thank you, Middlebury. And then I also really enjoy historic properties, and I particularly enjoy rehabilitating properties. I think that there's a lot to be learned from the past, and old buildings kind of speak to us. So it sounds kind of cliche, but it's very true, and particularly of the inn. The inn has this kind of aura that drives repeat customers. Despite the ups and downs in the past, people still come back. Workers love to work here, and even under all of the different owners, people love working here.
Shubig means
many springs.
Many springs.
It does. It's an Indian word that means island of many springs.
Okay.
And the island is the biggest in Casco Bay, and it is blessed with a ton of natural springs.
Which means there must be a spa in your future.
Oh, there is definitely a spa in our future. Oh, I can't wait until we have a spa. Maybe I'll even get to use it once in a while. But yeah. we've got grand plans. I'm a dreamer, and I do have grand plans for this place. It's a beautiful property, one of the best I've ever come across. No bias, of course. But
when was it built?
It was built in 1920.
The era of beautiful, absolutely.
It's
somebody told us that one time there were several hotels like this on the island.
There were 14 hotels on Shabig at one point in time. This hotel was originally built in the middle of the 1800s. It burned due to a guest mishap, in the 1890s. And this current building was rebuilt around the original fireplace and was completed in 1920. Mm-hmm. But we were one of about 14 hotels on this one island.
So the entertainment climate, if you like, the travel climate has changed.
Significantly.
And so you have a view of what it's like now, I'm sure.
Correct. It's interesting, the entertainment climate of the island, the whole climate of the island changed when it became more fashionable to travel by automobile instead of by steamship. The islands in Casco Bay used to have hundreds of hotels scattered about all of the different islands, and everybody would come by steamship. And once the car took off, people stopped coming by steamship and would come by car. And the islands started to close the hotels and became more fishing year-round communities, less of a hospitality focus, and continued to this day. Since the automobile is the predominant means of transportation, it is our biggest hurdle, trying to find ways logistically to bring goods and people to the island.
Yeah, I mean, we encountered that. We crossed over from Portland on the ferry, and there were the residents of this island collecting. One woman was picking up her laundry.
Oh yeah, it keeps us all honest and on time. That's for sure.
But the good news is you're here with new energy in your venture.
Absolutely.
So you're in a position to capitalize on people who are no longer bound to the era of the automobile. They're interested in a special island experience all over again.
Correct. And we really, our focus in the years to come is going to be a seamless transition. We would love to be able to pick you up right from the airport, bring you to the waterfront in Portland or elsewhere, and bring you right out to the inn. I envision years down the road, hopefully we are successful, but having a service where we could even have a glass of champagne for you waiting on a boat to bring you out to this beautiful island.
You do think big.
So I do. I think very big. And it's funny. You have to have an end goal. And then where you fall is probably somewhere short of that, but it's still there. So these
are the kinds of things you're going to do so that you succeed where so many other innkeepers or property owners have failed.
Exactly. It's an interesting business. The broker that sold us the property on the closing date said, "We'll see you in 2 years." And I said, "What do you mean?"
Oh, you're kidding.
And she said, "Well, all inns change between 2 and 3 years, change ownership every 2 to 3 years because nobody can make them work." And I took that and I was very surprised.
I'm surprised.
And I think that there's a way to do it. Inns are special. You shouldn't have to go broke every 2 years and then turn it over again. And I'm definitely determined.
Yeah, I look at the Inn of Little Washington. How old is that?
Exactly. It's a beautiful property. It's an interesting industry. But there's many properties that do phenomenally well that are smaller than us. So we do have high hopes.
Well, how's it going so far?
So far, we have beat every projection we set in place. We have been blessed with unbelievable summer weather. I can probably count the number of rainy days on a single hand, literally. And our chef has outperformed our wildest dreams. We're getting great feedback.
It's
going to be wonderful tonight, I promise.
I mean, I'm right with him.
Okay, so year one is some new energy behind the property.
New energy behind the property.
And a new kitchen team.
New kitchen team.
Fine dining or casual dining at the option of the guest.
It's a casual dining experience with fine dining cuisine. We offer the level of food of a fine dining establishment with a casual ambiance. Casual service, you're on an island. It should not be uptight. It shouldn't be stressful for the employees or for the guest. It's a very casual, comfortable atmosphere with amazing food.
And then spa next year, maybe?
Spa could be in the future next year. If not next year, definitely the year after. The hotel is definitely in a new position. We're going after a different mindset. We are focusing on a younger crowd. Well, we love our older crowd as well. We're trying to bring some energy back to the building, and energy is contagious.
Was there some way of actually making it run through the winter as well, or not?
The building is classic cottage construction, so the inside wall is actually just the backside of the outside clapboard.
Oh,
so there's not even a real wall in place. We do have plans to slowly insulate the building to make it more three-season.
Okay, but right now, really, it's practically uninhabitable.
Exactly. It's colder inside than it is outside, believe it or not, in the wintertime. It's like a big refrigerator. Exactly. So, but yeah, in the future, that's another big plan.
You must be thinking further beyond. You must have something else in mind. I just know you have.
I do. I've got a lot in my mind. I don't want to share all my secrets quite yet, but I have big plans for Shabig, for this inn, for Justin, our chef, and for the hospitality world in general. I do dream big. So we will see where it goes.
Not about details. I mean, website?
Website, ShabigIslandInn.com. I'll spell that for you all.
Yes,
it's amazing how many different spellings you get. But it's ShabigIslandInn.com. We have a beautiful website. It's got lots of very nice pictures. Gives the menu for the restaurant. And it gives very nice pictures of the rooms as well.
Well, congratulations on starting this venture. It's an amazing story. We got some more details from your mother that we won't publish on the air, but
it's probably a good thing.
makes us admire your effort even more. You are among the youngest guests I think we've ever had at On the Menu Radio. It's a fascinating story, and we look forward to welcoming you back over the years.
Thank you. I very much appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. I love meeting new chefs and finding out what all they're doing, what they're about, what they're interested in. And here I have Justin Rao. Good to meet you, Justin.
Nice to meet you.
You have had a complicated history, although you're back to where you started, more or less. You are a Mainer.
I am a Mainer, born and raised. Yep.
But you traveled everywhere.
I've been around. Yeah. I've worked, up and down the East Coast. So. Yep.
And you said you made it a point of getting to be working with the best chefs and the best restaurants in the East End, Maine, particularly New Hampshire.
Yep, Maine particularly. If you want to learn from the best, you have to be side by side with them on a daily basis. So I surrounded myself with the best chefs in the state, pretty much.
Well, that's great. And in fact, you've been to places that I was dying to go to that I haven't been able to get to this trip.
Yep.
Which means I have to come back. I'm
definitely
sure.
Have to come back.
So now, let's just jump into this, because we're going to be talking about your interests in cooking. You are new here because we had a change of ownership, but you're going to really use this wisely, because this is your first season. When you finish that, you have a break for winter, and you are a woofer. Would you please explain this? You're off to travel. You're going off to Italy.
Yep. Going to Spinocchia. It's a part of a worldwide organization of organic farmers. They have a full inn with vineyard and olive farm and complete animal farm. I'm going to go and learn the art of butchery and the art of curing and charcuterie, making cured meats.
Well, are you going to help raise in these animals?
I don't think so. I think their season is just about over.
Well, we could assume that you are involved with all of these sustainability issues, farm-to-table issues, slow food. Through all of that, what is your individual style of things?
I keep it simple. You don't mask the flavors of good food. You only use the best products available at the perfect time in the height of their season, and you bring out the natural flavors of whatever you're using, no matter what. So you don't cover it up with heavy sauces. I'm trained in French cooking, but that's only a minor part of my influence in cooking. Simple is better. People like simple.
Now, let's focus a little on you have a very short growing season in Maine.
Very short.
Yes, even shorter than we have in southwestern Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But you love Maine products. Talk to us about some of your favorites.
There's so many small farms around here that specialize in hundreds of different things. Right now, heirloom tomatoes are coming in, and blackberries and raspberries, although blackberries have been hurting because we haven't had any rain.
We've got so many blackberries this year.
Our bushes are starting to dry out a little bit. But, all that stuff is just starting to come in now. But this is the height of the season. Corn, tomatoes, you know, this is it. This is summer foods right now. And unfortunately, our season ends when, you know, or starts to slow down at least when some of the best foods come. So we're gonna get some people out here with some food.
Now, we're in Maine, so let's talk lobster.
Lobster.
What were you telling me? You have your own?
Our lobstermen, we deal with one lobsterman on an island of 50 lobstermen. He lives across the street, born here, lived here most of his life. His boat sits off the front of the inn right in the harbor. He's got four holding tanks for us that sit down there that he collects, you know, the perfect size lobsters that we request. And we're buying 200 of them a week from him. So
is that right?
Yeah.
200?
Yeah. Yeah. Anywhere from 150 to 200 a week we're buying.
What kind of lobster dishes do you have on your menu?
Right now it's English pea and mascarpone and lobster risotto. And then a butter poached lobster with black forbidden rice, summer vegetable ragu, and a shallot and bourbon beurre blanc. So, yeah.
Well, that's
one. We just figured out what Anne's having for dinner.
And what about oysters? I've been blown away. I fell in love with the new kind for me, Winter Point.
Winter Points, yep, yep. Damariscotta, Maine has, you know, the river up there has some of the best oysters, you know, that I've ever seen. We can definitely stand up to any of the Pacific Coast oysters. You know, my friends in New York City get these oysters shipped down to them. So, but yeah, it's... We are a good spot for...
You converted me already.
Yep.
I used to think the Pacific Northwest was the
end-all,
be-all of this oyster. No, I love it. Of course, I grew up on Blue Point, so...
Yeah.
Although I understand they don't have real Blue Points anymore.
No. Actually, I've never even heard of them.
Well, listen, let's walk through some of the specifics, just so people have an idea of when they come here, what kind of food they're going to be getting. I have some menus... Starting with, what do you do for breakfast?
We try and offer a very limited menu. Basically, it's two menus, one for the lighter appetite and one for more traditional breakfasts. Very seasonal, very local, as much as humanly possible. But, you know, traditional favorites, so...
So, and you get these, you get all these eggs and things locally too?
No, we probably go through 15 dozen eggs every 2 days.
Oh,
so.
Wow.
Yeah, there's not an egg farm around here that could keep up with our production. No. But we do buy Maine eggs and they are local, so they are as fresh as they can be. So.
Okay, now what about lunch?
Lunch is very simple. You know, we have fried oysters and a pulled pork sandwich. And,
oh, wow. I like both of those,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and our burger is on the menu. And, you know, it's very straightforward. A couple salads.
I'm really curious about one item. I've never seen this on any menu before. And I looked at it, and my eyes landed directly on lobster corn dog.
It's been a well received favorite of people who come here. That's offered on our Sunset Landing menu, which is the porch that sits right on the bay. Big wicker chairs, and just have appetizers with a group of your friends.
This should be Island Inn all day menu.
Yep, yep. We start
Sunset
that.
Landing.
Yep, we start that at 11:30, and that runs until we close at 9:00.
Okay, so now what we're going to be having next is dinner. And what are the highlights of your dinner?
We have a pan-seared halibut chowder on the menu that seems to be well-deserved.
Received.
Well-received, yes.
And well-deserved, undoubtedly. Yeah.
It's been on the menu since we opened, and it's one of those dishes that we really can't get rid of.
How about lobster gazpacho, my goodness.
Yep, that just came on the menu a couple weeks ago, as soon as tomatoes hit their season. Heirloom tomatoes have just come in, so this is the time to use them. So.
But you also do meats like venison.
Venison carpaccio, very summer-ish. It's a venison carpaccio BLT, basically.
What's your most favorite thing to work with, lobster?
I really like the corn dogs.
You like the corn dogs?
It's something that we didn't even test before we opened, so the first order that we got, it was like, I hope this works.
Well, what do you do with it? I mean, you just take a chunk of lobster?
We take a lobster claw.
A whole claw.
Yep, and you have to roll it in cornstarch to get the corn dog batter to stick, but it is a traditional corn dog batter.
Oh, my. I can't even imagine.
Yep.
I just watched somebody eat one of those the other day.
Yep.
Not lobster, but just a...
Yeah, and I wanted to serve it as close to with ketchup as possible, so it's served with a roasted tomato aioli. So it's close. It's close.
Oh, but that's great.
Yep.
And are you interested? Do you do pastries and desserts too?
I have in the past. It's not my forte. I can definitely do it, and I have done it for a couple of years. But if I had to say, I would rather do breads over pastries and desserts.
Me too.
Yeah.
So, but anyhow, next time we come, we're going to expect a big charcuterie platter.
Yep.
And you're going to do all that in-house
yep.
as well.
Yeah. Next summer, I should have some time to do it.
Well, you sound like you're having such a lot of fun.
I am. Yeah. It's been a quick season. I'm surprised it's almost over. So.
Well, I'm so glad that we got here before you closed down and took off. But I want to come back to see what happens, how you're transformed by this experience in Italy.
I think it is going to be an experience.
I think so too.
Yep.
So thank you, Justin.
Thank
I look
you.
Forward to dinner.
Thank you. Nice meeting you.
You know, it's not just lobster that you could OD on in Maine. We had lovely, really lovely rope-grown mussels. I can't remember the name of that island that they're from, but they're wonderful.
Bang
Island.
Bang,
that's right.
One of the things, we did hear a rumor that Bang Island is for sale, so if you want to get in the mussel business and you're interested in an island in Casco Bay, make an offer. I'm sure Casey Prentice will be able to help you figure out who to talk to.
Right. What about these wonderful oysters that we've had? I mean, I thought that the
Damariscotta River.
Damariscotta oysters were fabulous. And then I hit on something I loved even more was the Winter Point oysters.
Yeah, we feel almost disloyal because we did quickly polish off a dozen Damariscotta oysters last night.
That's true.
But the Winter Points that we had at, Vignola, to me, were the real star, but there's no question that Mainers or Maniacs or whatever you like to call them, and they call themselves either, we understand,
right.
they're onto something with the kind of water supply and water temperatures that they have in these,
they're
in these rivers.
Essentially year-round oysters because they don't spawn some of these.
That's what we heard. We were not sure we entirely understood that.
We'll have to ask John Riley. He knows all about oysters.
But the brininess of the water, the rapid tidal movement of the water, so it flushes in and out, and the low temperature of the water most of the year produces an absolutely wonderful product that isn't as well known because I guess the Mainers and Maniacs just eat as many of them as we can, and we try to do our share while we were here. Now, lots and lots of other seafood items besides the rope mussels.
Yeah, lots of fin
great,
fish.
Great sea scallops we had at
and
Walters.
Sea scallops.
Jeff said that they're still moving when he gets them. If they're available locally, which is the only time he buys them.
Yeah, and in season produce, I mean, the heirloom tomatoes are just coming in and they're wonderful too. And we've had a lot of corn and peas and, you know, really good produce.
So this is a real, this is a farm to table state. This is not just a farm to table at a few restaurants. This is a farm to table state of mind.
Right.
And has been for a long time. And that traces back to something I think one of our guests talked about. That in fact Maine has always been an agricultural state, and as well as a tourist state, and as well as a timber state, and as well as a fishing state, farming has always been an important part of the Maine way of life. And the wonderful part about it is that a modern generation of chefs who are capitalizing on that. And in next week's program, you'll hear someone who's combining both farming and restauranting in a way that it really is. Leading the farm-to-table wave and has been for a decade.
A goose just flew by.
A goose just flew by. There you go. Just in case you're wondering, we're talking about wonderful chef Melissa Kelly at Primo Restaurant, and that's a preview for what's going to be
next week.
Of next week's program. And, of course, we'll look forward to having you listen to us then. So same time, same place next week.
Bye-bye.